Laudator Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
Today, Thursday, May 8th, is the occasion of the famous Supplicatio, or plea to Our Lady of the Most Holy Rosary of Pompeii. And today, the whole world is looking toward the Sistine Chapel in expectation of the white smoke that will announce the election of a new pope. In the Vatican, I'm Christopher Wells. After three ballots, one Wednesday evening and two Thursday morning, the Church is still awaiting the election of the next pope. With the latest news from the conclave, here's Francesca Merlo.
Black smoke rose from the chimney over the Sistine Chapel at around 11:50 on Thursday morning, signalling the second ballot of the first full day of the conclave, and the third ballot overall was inconclusive. As the cardinals took a break for lunch, the people in the square continued to look up at the chimney in anticipation before voting resumed at around 4 p.m. Around 15,000 people had gathered in St. Peter's Square to await the announcement. Among those were Sarah and Cameron, a newlywed couple from Indiana in the United States, who were in Rome for their honeymoon.
We came here for our honeymoon. We got married 5 days ago.
They told Kelsey Gussie that they had been due to attend Mass with Pope Francis on Thursday, but that although saddened that this was no longer the case, they knew that
this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Sarah expressed her hope that the new pope might be able to be a voice of reason in a troubled world. This was reiterated by Father Prashant Padu, a student in Rome from the Archdiocese of Bombay in India. The Church has been blessed with wonderful popes, he said, and he expressed his hope that the next one might be able to encompass the best of them all.
Whatever the Pope says, the world listens. It's not only the Catholics, but people all around the world, they listen to what the Pope says and they respect the Pope's views. And therefore, you see that there's a lot of respect for the authority of the Pope. And to witness this historic event would be a blessing for all of them also, and that's why they come over here.
As the world awaits, who knows what the next hours and days hold. I'm Francesca Merlo.
And a reminder, Vatican Media has been providing live coverage of the wait for the white smoke. You can join us shortly after this broadcast, a little after 5 p.m. Rome time, for our next live commentary as we await the election of the Pope. You can also look for us on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and X for information and commentary and analysis on the ongoing papal election. Once again, you can also join us on our website at www.vaticannews.va. And during our live coverage this morning, that is Thursday morning, as we watched the chimney of the Sistine Chapel, was Dr. Donald Prudlow, a writer and historian at the University of Tulsa in the United States and an expert on church history. He gave us a brief overview of how the church has elected popes throughout the centuries.
Well, we know that the first successors of St. Peter were appointed. When the Roman Church was small, each successor would appoint their next successor. And as the Church grew, as it grew massively in the second and third centuries, it became the prerogative of the Roman clergy. The people that knew the city the best, that knew the Church the best, would make that selection. The Roman clergy would meet, they would select a successor, and then he would be acclaimed by the people. He'd be presented to the people. And so this became the normal way of doing things for nearly 500 or 600 years. As the papacy became more powerful, as it became known that the influence that it had throughout the church and beyond the church, we started to see interference by secular officials, by kings and princes and emperors. And so there was a long struggle to secure the religious office of the papacy that eventually culminated in the creation of the conclave. And the election was reserved to a special subset of the clergy of Rome that came to be known as cardinals, in Latin, the hinges of the Roman Church. And even today, we retain this practice. We saw last Sunday each one of the cardinals go to their titular churches, the ones where they were the nominal pastors of, and they celebrated Mass, they met the people of that parish, And so their title to be electors of the Pope comes from that connection, comes from that deeply Roman connection. So a bishop from Burma or from Singapore or from South Africa will be a Roman pastor and will participate in those elections.
And thanks there to Dr. Donald Prudlow. Dr. Prudlow is the Warren Chair of Catholic Studies at the University of Tulsa in Oklahoma in the United States. When we do have a new pope, his very first act, immediately after accepting his canonical election as Supreme Pontiff, and before fulfilling other obligations, is the choice of his name. His decision is announced by the Cardinal Protodeacon after the famous formula, Habemus Papam, we have a pope, followed by the pope's baptismal name in Latin. A long-standing tradition has it that popes changed their names from their birth name, though that hasn't always been the case, especially in the first centuries of Christianity. But why do popes change their names, and which names have recurred most frequently in history? Lisa Zangarini investigates.
The custom of popes adopting a new name emerged as early as the first millennium of Christianity to signify that the election to the Petrine See is akin to a second birth. This ritual followed the example of the first pope, St. Peter, whose birth name Simon was changed into a name meaning rock, symbolizing the role assigned by Jesus to the apostle as the foundation of the church. However, not all popes have followed this custom. Out of 266 popes in history, only 129 have chosen a new name. In the early centuries of Christianity, many popes changed their names because their original ones were of pagan origin. The tradition became standard practice starting in 955 with Pope John XII and has continued to this day, with the exception of Adrian VI and Marcellus II. Names chosen often reflect continuity or a fresh direction. Many popes select names of admired predecessors as a signal of respect and of their desire to continue in their footsteps. Others, like Pope Francis, the first to take the name of the Saint of Assisi, opted for novel names to embody innovation and spiritual renewal. Some names recur frequently. John is the most common, first adopted in 523 by Saint John I and last used by Saint John XXIII in 1958. Gregory, Benedict and Pius also appear regularly. Notably, the name Pius dominated from 1775 to 1958, with 7 of 11 popes during that period bearing it. Among the names never chosen by a pope are Joseph, James, Andrew and Luke. No pope has ever chosen the name Peter out of reverence for the first pope. However, 6 popes have taken the name of the Apostle Paul, including Paul VI, whose choice reflected one of the key aspects of his pontificate, the initiation of apostolic journeys abroad. Albino Luciani pioneered the dual name in 1978 as John Paul I, followed by the Polish Pope, St. John Paul II. After his election in 2005, Pope Benedict XVI explained that he chose his name to honour both Benedict XV and the extraordinary figure of St. Benedict of Nursia, the father of Western monasticism and co-patron of Europe. I am Lisa Zangarini.
And thanks there to Lisa Zangarini for that insightful report on papal names. As we know, what takes place behind the closed doors of the Sistine Chapel is secret and is not to be shared without the express permission of the Roman Pontiff. But what cardinals can share with us are their personal impressions of a conclave in a general way. Delving into the archives of Vatican Radio, we found this precious memory of late American Cardinal William Wakefield Baum.
It's a very prayerful experience. We spent most of our time in prayer and reflection, and that's the spirit of the conclave. It's not what the world might think, and I'd like to emphasize that it is a spiritual experience, truly a retreat, and that it's mysterious what takes place. The operation of the Holy Spirit is with us, and we're aware of that. It's indefinable, but we are aware of it.
And from the archives of Vatican Radio, you heard there the voice of the late American Cardinal William Wakefield Baum. Also watching out for possible white smoke on Thursday morning here at Vatican Radio was Father Greg Appersell, the associate pastor of St. Patrick's Catholic American Parish in Rome, and the Paulist Fathers Procurator General to the Holy See. Father Greg is also a movie buff and a film critic. Devin Watkins asked him for his take on the new film, The Conclave, that has certainly brought some of the images and impressions of the process into the imagination of moviegoers around the world.
You know, when you know something about whatever the topic is, whether you're a doctor or a nurse or you're a teacher or you're in the government or you know about the monarchy, and they make a film or television show about that, you see all the mistakes and flaws. But usually movies like that aren't really about what they say they're about. Conclave, to me, is a movie about the main character, Cardinal Lawrence, played by Ray Fiennes, and his crisis of faith. And it's his journey through that faith with the accoutrements of the conclave. The facts of how it's done is they're off, but you can't do a documentary in 2 hours and have everything that's in that movie is for dramatic effect, and it relates to the crisis of faith that this man's going through. So you can't use it as a factual basis of what's going on inside that Sistine Chapel right now. It's not a battle between conservatives and liberals, although there's some aspects to it, I'm sure, and it's not about the flaws of each individual cardinal, which I'm sure people are thinking. So they see this movie and they think, okay, now I know what's going on. Well, some of it is true, but there's a lot of errors in it.
What are some of the glaring ones that stood out
well,
to you?
I don't know. I'd have to find out the facts about this, but I'm not sure if a cardinal in pectore would be allowed to enter like last minute like that. And there's no proof except for one little letter.
Yeah.
That's the basis for the whole ending and the whole story, which I think kind of threw the movie off a little bit.
On that point, that's exactly right. The Pope can name a cardinal without announcing it to the world. Only he and that cardinal, I imagine, would know. But for it to be valid, he has to announce it publicly by the time of his death.
Mm-hmm.
So even if that cardinal were in pectore, if no one knew about it, if it wasn't public record, then he was not a cardinal.
Right.
He doesn't deserve or wouldn't have the rights to enter.
And
there was
a lot of, not manipulation, but the previous pope was kind of like the puppeteer, you know, controlling what comes afterwards. And a pope doesn't do that. I mean, it's all, you know, dramatic conflict, intrigue, and it gives you an impression, but I'm telling you, that movie's made a lot of money in the last month.
And that brings us just about to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. In just a few moments, just after 5 p.m. Rome time, we invite you to join us once again as we resume our live conclave watch with English language commentary, awaiting the white smoke that will announce the election of the next pope. You can also follow us on social media, Facebook, X, Instagram, and YouTube for all the latest updates on the conclave. And be sure to visit our Vatican News web portal at www.vaticannews.va. Many thanks to our sound engineer, Alberto Giovanetti, in studio in the Vatican. I'm Christopher Wells.